I have a problem. And while I admit that this problem is entirely of my own making, I also have to admit the situation has gotten out of hand. You see, I have too many books. Okay, so having too many books isn't exactly the problem. No, my problem is one of space. I just don't have enough of it. There isn't enough room on my shelves to store the books I currently own, let alone to display all the new books I'm certain to acquire. So I have to get rid of some books. What's the best way to unload books? Sell them? Donate them? Recycle them? Trash them? Burn them? What's the life cycle of a book anyway? Wait, I know. I'll drop them off at the nearest little free library. That's the best way to get beloved yet unwanted books into the hands of like-minded readers. Right? Well, maybe not. Hello, and welcome to Jackie On, a podcast where I, Tom, am filling in for Jackie, who talks about her opinions on a bunch of different topics. This episode is my take on owning too many books and the harsh reality of the little free library phenomenon. Every language contains words that do not translate directly into English. The most famous of these, arguably, is the Norwegian and Danish word hygge, spelled H-Y-G-G-E, which imparts a feeling of coziness, comfort, and warm moments. Think sweaters, hot beverages, and roasting fireplaces. The German language gives us Weidensamkeit, which I'm not going to spell, but means, roughly, the feeling of peaceful solitude one gets when alone in the woods. And Finnish gives us sisu, S-I-S-U, which encapsulates in just four letters the feeling of perseverance in the face of adversity. There's even a Finnish movie about this ideal. It was called Sisu. It was released in 2022 and treads on the whole John Wick style of storytelling. It's entertaining if that's your jam. But Japanese offers us my favorite single word that translates into a concept in English word, sunduku. It's defined as the habit of buying books and not reading them. All my life, I've been an avid reader, and that means I've also been a longtime avid book buyer. I know. Public libraries exist, and they let you borrow books for free. And I do love public libraries. They're fun places to hang out, browse the books, see what's out there, learn about something new. But usually when there's a book I'm interested in, even tangentially, I'm more likely to purchase it than borrow it. I just like having books on shelves. Even if I never get around to reading them, although the intent is always there, I assure you. But as I mentioned in the intro, the problem with buying books is that eventually you'll run out of places to store them. And then what do? There are a few options. You can sell them. Used bookstores are fantastic places for book lovers, almost as good as libraries. But I could spend hours browsing the dusty shelves in the far corners of a used bookstore. In fact, I have many times. But used bookstores won't buy just any old book that crosses the buyer's desk. These are businesses, and that means they have to make money. So a book buyer won't be interested in a book that they feel just won't sell. It's important to remember that in most cases, the books you're trying to unload aren't worth as much as you want them to be. Humans attach sentimental value to objects, and with that comes an assumption of monetary value that's often inflated by nostalgia. All right, so no one wants to buy your books. Well, you can always donate them to a library. Then again, we're entering into something of a transactional relationship here. While I don't pretend to know the economics of running a library, the place is already full of books. It's not going to take on even more books that will just take up valuable shelf space if people won't be interested in checking them out. But you can also donate your books to Goodwill, the Salvation Army, or your local thrift shop. This is kind of the final dumping ground for unwanted books. Now, I don't have any numbers on this, but I suspect not a lot of books are sold through such donation centers. But it does offer you a relatively guilt-free way of getting rid of your books by making disposing of them someone else's problem. Well, if you don't want to donate them, you can recycle them. Most books are made primarily of paper. Paperback books, in particular, are kind of the definition of mixed paper, and in most cases can be tossed into the appropriate recycle bin. Hardcover books, on the other hand, are typically made of more than just paper. At the very least, the covers have to be cut off and thrown away. But the pages themselves can most likely be recycled. Now, if you don't want to recycle them, you could just throw them in the trash. I mean, the whole recycling system seems to be in some sort of flux anyway, so maybe it's easier just to toss them into the trash can and be done with them. And, of course, if we really want to go for the nuclear option, we can burn them. Now, this solution doesn't come with the best optics, considering history, but setting a big stack of books on fire will certainly make room on your shelves. The other thing you can do with unwanted books is to place them into a community book-sharing repository, like a little free library. After selling your books to a used bookstore, this is probably the best-case scenario for giving your beloved but unwanted books another shot at life. It all but assures that your books will find their way into the hands of like-minded readers who will love them as much as you once did. Right? The Little Free Library movement was started in Hudson, Wisconsin, in 2009. That's when a gent by the name of Todd H. Bowl placed a small replica of a one-room schoolhouse on his front lawn and populated it with books. His idea was to get books into the hands of willing readers by employing a take-a-book, leave-a-book approach. The whole concept was a tribute to his mother, a teacher, and a book lover. Bowl soon partnered with a community developer named Rick Brooks, and together they built and distributed a series of little free libraries across Wisconsin and Minnesota. By 2012, there were more than 2,500 small libraries installed, and the Little Free Library name became its own nonprofit organization. The movement grew exponentially from there, and today there are more than 200,000 officially registered Little Free Libraries in 128 countries. The first Little Free Library I learned about was in 2013. Well, maybe I wasn't the first, but it was the first one I remember being interested in. It was installed in New York City, and it was made from a yellow, upside-down plastic water tank mounted on a wooden frame. It stood about 6 feet high, and you browsed its contents by standing inside the tank. It was kind of waterproof, weatherproof that way. It was really interesting. It was designed by a Venezuelan firm called Stereotank, who seemingly hasn't designed anything since then. But it looked really cool. Our family happened to be visiting New York that summer, and we all really wanted to see this thing. We managed to find it, but we couldn't even get close to it. The library was on the property of St. Patrick's Old Cathedral School in Nolita, which is New York shorthand for Northern Little Italy. And so it wasn't accessible to the general public. We were all a bit let down about that. A quick aside, the coolest little free library our family visited was one in Detroit that looked like the TARDIS. You know, the time-traveling spaceship from the science fiction series Doctor Who that looks like a British police box. It was built in 2017 by a gent named Dan Zemke and a whole host of what is known as the TARDIS builders. And it was an impressive community library. I don't think it's an official free library anymore, but it has its own Facebook and Instagram pages as TARDIS Detroit. But the last posts were from December 2022. I really hope it's still there. It was pretty cool. Anyway, in the years after our first disappointing little free library experience, these things started popping up all over the United States. When we lived in Los Angeles, every neighborhood seemed to have at least two. And now that we live in rural Wisconsin, you'll find a little free library in pretty much every small village. One nearby town even has six. One reason for this rapid proliferation is that it's very easy to set up your own little free library. All you need to do, after building a library-shaped box, is to pay a $50 registration fee. That gets you a nice plaque to attach to your library and earns you an entry on the Little Free Library official interactive map on the organization's website. Of course, you don't need to pay the fee. There's nothing stopping you from building your own little free library and putting books in it. It won't be official. You can't technically call it a little free library. And you won't get added to the roster of libraries on the website. But I seriously doubt all that many people are driving around using the map to find the next little free library. As far as movements go, the Little Free Library Manifesto is built on some solid ideals. Simply put, the idea is to get books that have been read and loved into the hands of new readers. But while the idea of a free exchange for books is sound, in reality, individual little free libraries often fall short. Now, I've visited a lot of little free libraries in my day, and very few seem to be held to the founding principle. They're either perpetually full of beat-up books that no one seems to want, jammed with magazines, coloring books, or they're overflowing with the same generic selection of children's books, like Dr. Seuss and That Very Hungry Caterpillar. I mean, great books, but like those things are everywhere. And very few of them have any free space, which is kind of the critical element here. Admittedly now, little free libraries were built on the leave a book, take a book model. So I don't think the intent was ever to have one person like me roll up and dump an entire collection of unwanted reading material onto its already limited shelf space. But that said, the concept of the little free library doesn't seem to be living up to its promise. And why is this? Well, I have some thoughts. First of all, there are too many books. According to R.R. Bowker, that's the organization that issues the ISBN number that identifies books, and they do it for every book that's ever been published. In 2021, there were more than 3 million book titles published in the United States alone. Now, that's a significant increase over the previous two decades. According to that same data, there were a mere 282,500 books published in 2005. That's more than a 10x. All the productivity bros love to say 10x. That's more than a 10x increase in less than 20 years. There's also been a steady decline in reading. According to a poll by Gallup, people just aren't reading as much as they used to. From 2002 to 2016, college graduates read an average of 21.1 books per year. In 2021, that number dropped to just 14.6 books per year. And the situation is even more grim among young readers. The percentage of American 13-year-olds who read for pleasure has dropped from 35% in 1984 to just 14% in 2023. This is likely the result of a combination of factors, but mostly it's a shift in how Americans spend leisure time. Reading time, among those who do read, is down to an average of just 17 minutes per day. Meanwhile, consumption of other media, video games, streaming services, and scrolling through your social media feeds are all on the rise. I've seen this decline in reading firsthand, starting when our kids were in grade school. Now, our family's a reading family. Right now, we're all making our way through the Dungeon Crawler Carl series. Highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun. But for as long as I can remember, and my wife and I read every night, and we spent a lot of time reading to the kids. So this helped them develop a healthy curiosity about reading. And I'll say of all the milestones that measure a child's development, learning to read is the most remarkable. I mean, you got rolling over, you got talking, you got walking, and that's all good stuff. But learning to read is next level milestone stuff. There's nothing quite as amazing as watching your child go from not understanding all these symbols and shapes that bombard them as they move through the world to suddenly making sense of letters, then words, and then gaining the ability to parse sentences. It's truly incredible. But anyway, as our kids were growing up, the fact that they read was a big deal. And we were often asked by other parents how we got our kids to read. And I'd always ask the parents, well, what do you read? And most often the answer was, not much, I don't have the time. And the truth is, the best way to get your kid to read is to model reading. Anyway, there we have it. So an abundance of books combined with a decline in reading rates across all generations has effectively broken the promise of the little free library. People are leaving books, but no one's taking books. And that brings me back to my dilemma. Just what do I do with all the books that I don't have space for? I guess I'll have to build more bookshelves.